I call the Senate Health and Social Services Committee to order at 1:31 p.m. on Wednesday, February 20th, 2019. We're meeting today in room 205 of the Capitol Building. Please remember, as a courtesy, to silence your cell phones. Committee members present today are Senator Geisel, Senator Stevens, Senator Begich, myself, Senator Wilson. Senator Coghill is excused. Before the committee this afternoon is Senate Bill 7, Medicaid Assistant Work Requirement, by Senator Michicki. We heard this bill last week. At that time, we took public testimony, and we held public testimony open, and we will continue to take public testimony this afternoon. Later, we'll call up the senator and his staff to able to take questions from the committee. And also online is Shonda O'Brien from DHSS, Director of Public Assistance, to answer any committee members' question. At this time, the folks also, if you testified last week, please remember that we only do testimony just once. So if your name shows up and if we sort of pass you over, it's because of that purpose. With that, we'll continue to open public testimony. We're still open. We'll see anyone here in the room in Juneau. I think we have a Crystal Berlin, if you want to come up. And, Sanders in the room. Sorry. Hi. On the phone. And plan for we'll keep to the two-minute time limit. That's what we had last week as well. Please remember to state your name for the record and search when you're ready.
Yes, thank you. My name is Crystal Borland. I'm a Juneau resident, and I'm here today representing NAMI Juneau. We're a local nonprofit focusing on education and support for individuals affected by mental illness and an affiliate of the National Alliance on Mental Illness. Thank you for this opportunity to express our concerns regarding SB 7. As you know, Medicaid is a lifeline for eligible low-income Alaskans, pregnant women and children, our friends and families with disabilities, and the elderly. Medicaid eligibility conditional on employment does not further the goals of this program or help low-income individuals improve their circumstance. Supported employment, job training, and comprehensive health coverage do. Access to Medicaid often supports an individual being able to engage in work and community, but work requirements may have the opposite effect and undermine individuals' employment and management of their health care needs. One serious concern for me and for our organization is individuals who do not meet disability criteria but live with a medical condition, mental illness, or substance use disorder. These individuals may need to step away from work due to periodic disability or illness, a decline in their mental health, or substance use treatment. While exemptions look good on paper, I think we can all imagine the additional stress these individuals would experience as they face the potential loss of health coverage while they navigate filing for a work requirement exemption. And it should also just be noted that Social Security disability insurance usually is several years in waiting for people who have a disability. So Medicaid is often the lifeline for those people as they wait for an SSDI application to go through. There are many concerns for residents in our rural communities. Limited work, job training, supported employment, and volunteer opportunities are among them. Even if considerable efforts go into developing these opportunities, they may not meet the required hours. There will likely be challenges with reporting subsistence activities, and there are general reporting challenges to consider in remote areas. There are also rural Alaskans with medical needs who may not have access to a timely access to a provider to verify a disability or other hardship to satisfy an exemption. The bill as presented does not address many of the concerns and unintended consequences brought forward in public testimony, and I urge the committee to vote no on SB 7. Thank you.
Thank you. Perfect timing. Next, is there anyone else here in the room in Juneau that wishes to testify on this bill on SB 7? Next, we'll go to Homer with Ms. Kate Flynn. Kate, you have 2 minutes to give your testimony before the committee. If you could state your name and affiliation, and you may begin when you're ready.
Okay, thank you so much. My name is Kate Finn, F as in Frank, I-N-N, not Flynn. That's okay, though. I'd like to ask you to please deny this bill as it sits right now. And Crystal from NAMI was probably much more articulate than I can be. However, what I'd like to say is that in order to do any of the things, be employed, live a subsistence lifestyle, participate in any of the work or work equivalents, it requires a certain amount of healthiness and health care to do that. Everybody gets sick. Everybody has times when they need to go out for sometimes months at a time. People get in car accidents. People have things happen. If you need health care to work, but you need work to receive health care, that really is kind of a catch-22 that's very, very difficult. However, What I want to say before I continue is that I really appreciate, as I've read the bill, Senator Machicki and whoever else was a part of constructing this, to really get into the minutia of exclusions. And I think that those are really excellent. I just think they're hardly sufficient. And one of the things I'd like to point out, pregnancy is an exclusion from this requirement. But as I was sitting here waiting, listening to Lisa Murkowski give the talk on TV here that she gave yesterday, I was looking through the NCSL State Legislature magazine, and I see that it says the U.S. is the most dangerous place in the developed world to give birth. And what I'd like to say is I've been a midwife. I've been a nurse for a really long time, and pregnancy, the outcomes of pregnancy, those kinds of things are just the tip of the iceberg. They're easy to measure. They're easy to see because they're so dramatic, and people pay attention to that. But the less obvious disabilities, the less obvious difficulties are harder to see, and so I really feel we need to pay attention to them. Is that it? Please do not vote this bill as it stands at this time. Thank you.
Thank you. Next up, we'll go to Delta Junction's LIO with Diana Chadwell.
Hello.
Hello, Diana. If you could state your name and affiliation for the record and plan for about 2 minutes for your testimony, you may begin when you're ready.
Thank you. This is Dr. Chadwell from Delta Junction, Alaska, C-H-A-D-W-E-L-L. Guys, you're not seeing some of the aspects of this. You're asking disabled Alaskans who are on Social Security disability to violate the legalities of receiving our monthly income. We cannot work, or we do not receive our Social Security disability. Medicaid is federally mandated. If Alaska passes this law, we are breaking federal law and discriminating against disabled, special needs, and the poor. I have spent 4 years in court arguing over a Medicaid prescription for eyeglasses. The most expensive annual need I have is a $600 pair of eyeglasses. We do need to change Medicaid. The problem is we need to stop giving it to the lowest bidder, who is hiring unqualified personnel, to mandate that. People who are mandating Medicaid need to have the same training as everyone who is hired in a hospital or a doctor's office within Alaska. Do not pass SB 7. This is a no-go scenario. The way I see things, if we want to change what we're doing, we need a legislature who's willing to set the example that Dan Price and Ben and Jerry have. You take pay cuts, you donate the funds to the programs in need, you expect us to live on $1,000 a month? Don't ask us to do what you cannot do. You live on $1,000 a month if that's what you want us to do. My whole COLA increase was $3 a month. And then you took away $9 in food stamps. So it's a no-go scenario. Thank you.
Thank you. I believe that's all that's online. We did receive a couple of other additional folks, some written testimony, which are in committee members' packets for members from the public who cannot be here today to testify, who or may have been cut off from last week's testimony. Is there anyone else here in the room of Juneau that wish to testify on SB 7? Seeing and hearing none, we at this time will close public testimony. This time, we'd like to invite Senator Machicki and his staff, Eldred Morledge, to the table to respond to any questions or from testimony or from concerns from testimony or committee members' questions. And I think I will start off with a couple of questions from Senator Machicki. We've heard from folks testifying upon some of the exemptions. We heard from folks that talked about age reduction, tribal membership exclusions. We heard from one person talked about school versus if they're age 18, 19 and still in the public school system and they're on Medicaid, or if they're in university or trade schools, and the increase of the dependent from a year, I believe, to 60 months. Do you have any comments on any of those exclusions, whether amendable, not amendable?
So, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for hearing this bill again. I've worked with all of you. I think you know that I have a common sense approach. I think you know what's in my heart in this bill. It's about opportunities. It's not about being punitive on health care. I am open to common sense suggestions that make the bill better. That's how the process works. And I've heard a few. I've heard a lot of things in public testimony that are not a part of the bill. That's just kind of a common thing when folks are mobilized against a particular movement. This movement is about helping Alaskans to be the best they can be. But I will give you another example, Mr. Chairman. The Ashna letter has some good suggestions as well. We have a seasonal workforce in Alaska. We have to include that in the bill. Some people work very hard for part of the year, and I don't want them to lose their health care in the part of the year when they're not working. There are other examples about periods of losing the first time someone doesn't meet the requirements that may be a shorter-term basis to help them transition into employment opportunities. So I'm open to common sense changes to the bill that make it better. I don't have a line in the sand that separates those people from these people. We're all Alaskans. We want to help them to succeed. So, yes, open to the types of changes you've talked about.
Thank you. Senator Stevens.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. From the Senator McGee, from the testimony we heard, the comment was made that exemptions take a long time. Do you have any reflection on that? The comment seemed to say that it takes years to get exemptions. Do you know anything about that, or do you have any thoughts on it?
Through the chair, Senator Stevens, I'm not sure I understand your question on exemptions taking a long time.
Anyway, this lady said that you must file to get an exemption, but that it takes sometimes, I thought she said years to get that exemption.
If I could, Senator Stevens, I think that was upon applying for the waiver itself. Could that be it? Are you talking
yes.
about for?
Yeah, it's the waivers, right?
Okay.
Right.
So we are not, it's not clear on the timeline of being successful with an 1115 waiver. All we can do is apply, and we can look at the record for the other states. They vary on the length of time on how long it's taken for them to be accepted, and they're all in various stages of execution. It's hard for me to give a hard timeline on when that could be successfully accepted.
And if I could help, the 1115 waivers don't have a specific timeline for the federal government to get back to the states upon. The 1332 waivers do, and the 1915 waivers do have that specific timeline of when the federal government has to get back. And I see Ms. O'Brien back, who might be able to give further definition on that, if that's all right to call a lifeline to confirm or deny that statement. Do you want?
Mr. Chairman, I appreciate you know much more about this than I do, but maybe an understanding of what those specific waivers are when we go through them, so I have a better idea of what they mean. Instead of 1115, I have no idea what that means.
For the record, my name is Shonda O'Brien. I'm the Director for Public Assistance. So this particular bill would require the department to file for an 1115 waiver. And so as Senator Wilson was commenting, it does take some time to get those approved. I believe when I was here last week, I testified, though, that we would look to what other states have already applied for and see if we can make our process more efficient, try and mirror what they're doing in other states that have been successful already.
And Ms. O'Brien, would you be able to define what 1115 waiver is?
Probably,
I know that's difficult.
Yeah, probably not accurately on record. I can follow up in writing, though, to the committee and kind of outline for you what the differences are between the different waiver programs and what would be required for us in order to apply for this one.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Follow up on that. Just to make sure I understand it. So that a waiver is requested through your department, the state, and then it goes to the federal government. So we have no control over what the feds may do. But I see your concern. If it takes years to get a waiver, that would be frustrating.
Yes, through the chair. Like I said, though, I think with where other states are right now in their requests, we might see some efficiencies in the process and maybe some streamlining to how we might implement in our state
Thank
the
you.
Bill were to pass.
Senator DeGiesel?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I certainly understand Senator Stevens' puzzlement at all these numbers. We have a document today in front of us with the and it kind of summarizes at least a part of 1115, new policy allowing states to implement work and community engagement requirements. States must seek federal approval to require non-elderly, non-pregnant, and non-disabled adults to meet those requirements to qualify for full or partial Medicaid coverage. So that's what the focus of this work aspect of Medicaid is referring to. But at some, I know there's some documents out there that summarize the different waivers and the areas they cover, which we can certainly get at another time. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. And we'll try to make sure that all committee members have that because it's very detailed because you have J, K different through the waivers, and it's a very complicated system. Thank you, Mr. O'Brien. Unless Senator Begich, do you have a question for?
Yes, I do. Actually, if you could just hold for a second, because I think you might be better suited to answer it than Senator Michicki. Last year, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Last year, Senator Kelly introduced this bill, and I think it's substantially the same. I was out of town for the first hearing, so I missed that. But I think substantially the same as what we had moved to with the amendments. And I don't know yet because I haven't examined that, and I apologize. But Senator Kelly asked me to go through the fiscal notes for him, and I had done that. I went through each of them. I didn't have staff do it. I did it as a former staffer. I thought I could. And I went through those fiscal notes quite extensively and to find out if there was some wiggle room or fudge room or things that could make it more efficient as a bill. And I made those recommendations to Senator Kelly at the time. But I note that the number has changed in the fiscal notes, and that number is originally, the assumption was that there would be, it was 10.5% would be essentially moved off the rolls. And last year, now it's 25% would be moved off the rolls. I just wonder if you might be able to share with the committee why the difference was 10.5% before and now 25%, because that, of course, has a substantial impact on the fiscal notes. So I'm wondering why that difference.
Through the chair, Senator Begich, the assumptions that were made last year were a point in time based on what we were seeing in enrollment. The specific details of who we're looking at and the number of enrollees, excluding those that are exempted from the work requirements, changes the calculations just slightly. We're basing some of our assumptions off of the existing TANF work requirement program. So we have a in place now under the TANF program, we have work services that we have case managers that work with folks to get them back into the workforce. So we're using some of those assumptions in the calculations as well. excuse me, not seeing as much growth in the program overall for Medicaid as we were originally.
This is Katrina.
So just to follow up, though, you said slightly changing and adjusting numbers. That's 150% difference between 10% and 25%. So what's the – that's an increase in the number that's rather substantial.
Right. Through the chair, Senator Begich, the assumptions that we're using are that through success in the program, hopefully we'll see more people come off the enrollment and return back into the workforce. And so – we're basing those assumptions off of what we hope to be the successes of the program.
So a couple more follow-ups.
Yes, Senator Baggett.
So if indeed the bill passed, we already have an 1115 waiver in the works. How many can a state have at a given time? We would have to amend our 1115, wouldn't we?
Through the chair, Senator Baggett, we would have a new – we would be requesting a new waiver separate from the one that's already in the works.
And so to follow up to that, so I'm going back to Senator Stevens's implication in terms of the question, which is how much time are we talking about here then? If this bill were to pass and get signed into law, say, this year, it has an effective date. I think that is July 1. I'm not exactly sure, but I think it's July 1. Assuming that happened, how long before these work requirements would kick in? Because you would then have to go through an 1115 process. You'd have to get that process. Can you give us just a general estimate? I realize there's no timeline on these, but is there a general estimate you could give us before we would see this particular piece of legislation kick in?
Sure. Through the chair, Senator Baggett, the fiscal notes were based off of an implementation start date of, I think, December 31st to get the regulations updated to get the waiver through the approval process. But we would begin staffing for the program July 1st, hiring. We'd have to hire new staff to do the case management aspects of the work, get them trained on the program requirements, how we would go about implementing, sending notification out to the population that would be subject to the work requirements of the bill. And so we estimated that would happen concurrently with the approval process for the 1115 and updating regulations.
Okay. Additional question?
Not at this time.
Okay. Thank you. Sure. Any other questions for the department or for Senator Machicki? Senator Giesel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Machicki, there have been states that have implemented this. I mean, this is documented in the materials that you provided for us today. And I'm noting in the work hours required page of this that 80 hours is actually a rather common. It's not uniform, but it's common. Some are 20 hours, some are less. Do you have any data indicating the success or outcomes of these programs? I noticed that today we have materials from Arkansas. Are you able to elaborate on that at all?
I'm going to bring my staff back up if I can at this point. I do have a point to make, though, just in the previous discussion. Remember, this program has been around for 13 months, right? We have a significant amount of states who are either approved or pending approval, which should give some indication on the amount of time it would take to move forward for those even that jumped on it somewhat right away. And I believe that we provided that National Academy for State Health Policy document in your packet. So it has a spreadsheet of those that have applied, what stage of implementation they're in, and the work requirement hours. It does seem that 20 is somewhat of a standard. I like the idea, which we did not consider earlier, for a monthly total instead of a weekly average, particularly in volunteer opportunities in places where perhaps employment might be somewhat limited. I like the idea that someone could dedicate a greater part of the month to meeting the requirement and perhaps not have it a reporting requirement as a weekly total. Are you ready for that question on Arkansas?
Yes. For the record, Edra Morledge, staff to Senator Machicki. Through the chair, Senator Giesel, I'm currently in the process, well, actually I should say our legislative research division is in the process of gathering that data for us, but there are no definitive studies as of yet that would show any comprehensive data. Some of the states have been held up by various lawsuits in implementing the program. Some just, as the senator said, just haven't been around long enough to get the aggregate data together and show some concrete numbers. But our Legislative Research Division is looking into that right now, and I will make sure that the committee members see that once we receive it.
A follow-up, Senator Giesel?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know how it is that, therefore, that we have January 2018 Arkansas report here on our desk, and the report actually is pretty positive. They saw incomes more than triple for those folks that had left welfare and gone on to work. And remember, again, these are able-bodied people, not pregnant. I don't know what their exemption is in terms of age of children at home, et cetera. But they talk in here about the savings to the state. My interest is much more the impact on people, the self-esteem, the independence that people gain from having their own employment and earning their own way, and certainly then the example they provide for their children. This is how you actually can earn your own way, and the motivation in terms of children in education. So I see that Arkansas report here. I've also seen data from Kansas, and I don't see them summarized in the document you provided from the National Academy for State Health Policy. But their report is also quite positive. Again, folks significantly increasing their income, far offsetting the benefits they were receiving from welfare, from TANF, and other aspects of Medicaid. So anyway, I'm looking forward to that LegLegal research document. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Through the chair, Senator Giesel, I think a lot of the report that you're reading from Arkansas is related to their welfare reform. So if the report actually came out before the CMS 1115 waiver on Medicaid work requirements, and that's one of the reasons for our interest. Worked with Senator Kelly this year. I'm still interested here, and we saw that able-bodied childless adult enrollment in Arkansas food stamp program dropped by 70%. Their incomes more than tripled within 2 years of leaving welfare. New income more than offset lost food stamp benefits, and taxpayers were saving more than $28 million per year. They've seen relative success on their SNAP and TANF reductions. This, our bill specifically on Medicaid work requirements, if we see the same result, we can look at those other programs. But I think it's clear that this is about opportunity. We also provided other studies in the documentation you have, the study by Buckeye Institute's Economic Research Center determined that women may earn an additional $212,000 or more and men an additional $323,000 or more over the course of their careers while remaining on Medicaid with work requirements. So again, this is encouraging education or job training, social interaction and community participation, requiring accountability for those that are able-bodied in a regular, structured manner, and improving socioeconomic conditions instead of a life of dependency. We are still providing for those willing to work or volunteer the health care benefits that will get them to the point of dependency where those benefits are not important to them anymore because they will likely have private insurance and likely be moving on in their lives. So this is in no way keeping people down. This is a way to, I hate to sound corny, but sort of giving them wings on sort of the most opportunity available to them in their lives. And those, it's some that are fighting this bill and that have fought Medicaid work requirements and public assistance work requirements across the country, they don't ever want to impugn their intentions. Some of them benefit from those programs either directly or are providers for some of those programs that benefit directly. And I'm trying to separate that from this discussion. This is about the individual and the opportunities and success of, for and of that individual.
All right, thank you.
Mr. Chairman,
yeah.
Could I make another suggestion to Senator Machiki? Some information I'd like to see, and that comes from AHFC, our own Alaska Housing Finance Corporation, who has low-income housing. And I spoke to them recently. I'd like to see it in writing because, of course, this was a verbal conversation, that they have seen a tremendously positive impact from that as people are initially given that support with low-income housing and then work their way out of it. But providing that safety net, but not as a permanent solution, but an opportunity to work their way out of it. That would be interesting to see in writing. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, and I've our office has already requested the data from the voucher program from when they have the step down, the 5-year plan for their vouchers. So we're looking forward to that data, and we can definitely share that with the committee when we receive it too. So we, I don't want the senator to go out and duplicate our efforts that we've already looked forward to. Senator Begich.
Thanks. Just a couple quick questions, Senator Chicky. So the Arkansas report that was attached wasn't provided by your office. It was just attached to the file. Or was it provided by you guys?
Through the chair, Edra Moreledge again. Excuse me. Yes, that was provided by our office.
Okay.
For the purposes of illustrating that work requirements do work in other welfare programs.
Right, but they hadn't gotten an 1115 waiver or passed a bill until March of last year. Is that not right?
Yes, and Senator Begich, I think it also came through public comment as well.
Oh, through public comment as well. Thanks, Joe. Okay. But so what I'm getting at there is it's that it, I see the connection. I just want to be sure clear that they don't have they're one of the lawsuits. Their state's one of the lawsuits you've been talking. You know, when you mentioned earlier that there were a number of lawsuits, their state is one of those states that has a lawsuit now against their work requirement bill. Isn't that correct?
Through the chair, Senator Begich, yes, that is correct. They are one of the states that had a lawsuit. Their waiver was granted.
It was granted, yes. Mr. Chairman, if I may, just to
please
follow
continue.
Up. That there was granted, I think, in August, is that right, of 2018? So we have about 3 months, and then they were challenged in a lawsuit. My questions aren't either for or against the bill. They're just pointing out that one, that the data that we're looking at here, which is good data, shows, you know, these improvements that Senator Machiki, you mentioned, that they're related to other things that were required by Arkansas, not this kind of a waiver, because that waiver wasn't in existence long enough for them to get that kind of data. Isn't that true?
Through the chair, yes, that's correct.
Yeah, and so my last question, just the last follow-up, is just how many of these lawsuits are there out there, and are we potentially going to find ourselves in one? Because that does concern me a little bit if this passes.
Through the chair, Senator Begich, that's another thing that I've asked legislative research to look into. I'm getting conflicting data in my own research, so they should be getting that information back to me, I would imagine, in just a couple of days.
Very much appreciate your responses. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you. Response, Senator?
Just a brief one. Certainly have no way of predicting whether or not we're going to be sued on any piece of legislation that goes through this body. So I can't stop working to improve the lives of Alaskans worrying about that. But I appreciate the question. Thank you.
Senator Stevens.
Mr. Chairman, I just want to say I told you so. You should not appoint me to this committee because I have no background in this at all. But it just I wonder. I mean, I read this thing on from Arkansas, I think, wow, this is wonderful, the things that they have done. But now what I'm hearing is what we're doing is not exactly what Arkansas is doing. Can you tell me the difference between what Arkansas has done and what we are planning to do in Senate Bill 7?
So the Arkansas paper has been provided to you as a model of what can occur when people are nudged and supported and encouraged to take the full advantage of temporary support programs, but to move on towards self-sufficiency and independence in their lives. Very direct correlation to Medicaid. So what are we saying with this bill? We're saying we want you to retain your Medicaid benefits, but if you're able-bodied, we want you to start advancing and sort of developing your potential. And one day you will likely not require support from Medicaid. And we're seeing with other states and other programs, both in, I'll say welfare, because that's what they have on the front page of the Arkansas paper, and in Medicaid, the reason the 1115 is there is that these practices are proven to be successful with a subset of the Medicaid and public assistance populations. It's not going to work with everyone. Our goal is not to eliminate people from the health care they need. Our goal is to help lessen dependency on state and federal provider programs such as Medicaid and public assistance. This bill is about Medicaid.
All right. Any other questions from committee members? Senator Stevens.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm still confused, but I'm confused at a much higher level. I appreciate your comments. I mean, and reading through this Arkansas, it's really quite amazing. And I'm not sure exactly what we're doing that is exactly like that. Not exactly that, I understand. But nonetheless, it's a very good report to read through. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I think the first state to go through this whole process and come out of a lawsuit and sort of prevail was Kentucky on that. And I'm not sure how long ago they filed their work requirements in terms of sort of their expansion of their waiver process. But I think they're probably one of the leading states in terms of applying for waivers, acquiring their waivers. But I'm not sure if they're finished with their litigation process, which I thought was positive for the state in support of their work requirement legislation.
They have, Mr. Chairman, they have a lawsuit that was initiated last month in Kentucky, a follow-up lawsuit. They initiated in January of 2018, and Governor Bevin initiated the process quite early in 2017. Initiated the beginning of the waiver process quite early in that time period.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Senator Bage. All right. Any other follow-up questions? Or seeing and hearing none, we'll set this bill aside for the time being and please provide any amendments to my office by close of business this Friday of this week. I believe that concludes our business for the committee for the day. Our committee will not meet on this upcoming Friday. Are there any closing comments from convened members? Senator Begich.
Just one very quick one. Earlier it was mentioned that Ashna had some ideas and thoughts, and I don't know if the I should have asked this during open debate, but is somebody working with them on those? Because I'm not at this point.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
The letter from Ashna is in your packet. Don't support all of their ideas, but I do think those are the kinds of things on exclusions. We want this to work for Alaskans. We want this to work for Alaskans that depend on Medicaid for their health care. So with that, I'll make the statement again that we have no hard line in the sand. We want it to be the best bill it can be on helping Alaskans advance.
And I apologize, Senator Machicki. I should have asked if you had any closing comments as a bill sponsor.
No, thank you, Mr. Chairman, very much for hearing the bill. We look forward to working with your office and the committee on the best bill we can move forward.
Thank you. Any other closing comments from committee members? Seeing or hearing none, we are adjourned today at 2:09 p.m.